بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. وإذ قال إبراهيم رب أرني كيف تحيي الموتى قال أولم تؤمن قال بلى ولكن ليطمئن قلبي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم. مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم. الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون. قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. And when Abraham said, "My Lord, show me how you revive the dead," he said, "Do you not believe?" He said, "Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest." He said, "Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening. And know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise." Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by a front, and Allah is all sufficient, most forbearing.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Going inside, Israel's indiscriminate strikes across the Gaza Strip as more civilians, most of them women and children, are killed across Palestinian territory. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah conducts fresh retaliatory operations against Israeli targets in occupied territories. And the Yemeni army's released footage of downing of the U.S. Air Force MQ-9 aircraft over the country's Al-Jawf governorate. Hello everyone and welcome to World News. Palestinians in Gaza are going through another day of bloodshed as the Israeli military continues to pound the blockaded territory with more air and heavy artillery strikes. In one of the deadliest attacks, at least 9 people were killed after Israeli warplanes bombed tents of displaced Palestinians in southern city of Khan Yunis. Several others were also injured, including one critically. Also in the south, Israeli ships opened fire on Palestinians on the beach of Rafah, killing a fisherman and injuring several others. Israeli military also bombed a school in Al-Tufa area, northeast of Gaza City, killing at least five people and leaving several others injured. U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza began in October last year, and since then, more than 43,500 Palestinians have been killed and nearly 103,000 injured. Now to get the latest from the besieged Gaza Strip is our correspondent Moti Abu Musaba, now joining us from the central city of Deir al-Balah. What could you share with us?
Today is the 400th consecutive day for this Israeli massacre, for this Israeli genocidal campaign targeting the besieged enclave. We are talking about continuous and ongoing Israeli destructive air strikes and attacks that are still hitting multiple areas of Gaza Strip. The Palestinian people today woke up to more appalling massacres that have been committed and perpetrated against the Palestinian people, particularly in Khan Yunis City. We are talking about at least 9 Palestinian civilians were slaughtered after the Israeli warplanes targeted several makeshift tents in different parts of Khan Yunis City, in addition to dozens of injuries as usual. Those areas are still hit by the Israeli occupation forces, particularly when it comes to the western part of Khan Yunis City, including Al-Mawasi area. And here in the middle area of Gaza Strip, the Israeli warplanes carried out several brutal air strikes and attacks against various essential buildings in Al-Burj refugee camp, while the Israeli tanks continued to shoot, to open the gunfire towards the residential areas in the northern part of Al-Nusrat refugee camp as well. When it comes to Gaza City, as you know, another appalling massacre was perpetrated and committed against the Palestinian people taking shelter in Fahad al-Subah school in Al-Tufah area, killing at least 6 Palestinian civilians and injuring multiple others. It's a continuation of the deliberate Israeli massacres being committed against the Palestinian people in all areas of Gaza Strip. And even when it comes to the northern part of Gaza Strip, it is still the focal point of the ongoing genocidal attacks amid this ongoing campaign targeting the northern district of Gaza Strip. Beit Lahia City was hit and subjected to more cruel attacks over the last night, targeting several residential buildings and houses. The current situation is beyond catastrophic, and it is extremely excruciating for the Palestinian people suffering in the northern part of Gaza Strip. According to the latest estimate of the Gaza Civil Defense System there, that at least 50,000 Palestinian civilians are still trapped in different parts in the northern part of Gaza Strip. They are still besieged by the Israeli occupation forces, and they are still vulnerable to continuous Israeli airstrikes and attacks that are still taking more lives of the Palestinian people. We are witnessing real and notable escalation carried out by the Israeli occupation forces, particularly when it comes to the air raids that are still maintained heavily against the Palestinian people, including the residential buildings and the makeshift tents and the gatherings of the Palestinian people wherever they are.
Thank you, Moti. Stay safe. Have a good morning. We'll talk to you soon. Moti Abu Musaba updating us from Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. Israeli forces have killed yet another Palestinian journalist in Gaza's regime pushes on with its onslaught. The Gaza government media office said the journalist was a local radio broadcaster. Khalid Abu Zir's death has raised a number of journalists now and media workers killed by the Zionist entity in Gaza to 184 since October 2023. The media office called on the international community to hold the regime to account for its crimes against Palestinians, especially journalists. Last week, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres slammed killing of journalists by Israel as utterly unacceptable. Author and journalist Robert Fantina believes that Israel deliberately kills journalists to intimidate and prevent them from covering the truth about the regime's war crimes in Gaza.
These are war crimes. There are several populations that are specifically protected under international law in war zones. Journalists are one of those populations. Hospitals are another. UN refugee centers are yet another. Schools are another. And Israel has violated these protections repeatedly in the last 13 months or so. This killing of this latest journalist, and I offer condolences to his family and loved ones. This is just another attempt by Israel to intimidate journalists and to prevent the news, the truth of what is happening in Gaza, from getting out to the world. If all the journalists are either killed or they're too frightened, and of course we've seen tremendous courage displayed by these journalists, but if they are prevented from reporting, then Israel hopes that its continued war crimes can simply be accelerated. But there doesn't seem to be any kind of check on Israel's behaviors, on its violations of international law, its war crimes. The things that the pictures we're seeing, the videos we're seeing coming out of Gaza every day are horrifying, heartbreaking, and the fact that the international community is allowing this to continue is absolutely appalling. History will judge this time period very harshly based on what's happening in Gaza.
The Israeli Knesset has passed a law enabling courts to hand down prison terms to Palestinian minors. 5-year measure allows a court to detain children under the age of 14 in closed facilities if convicted of murder. And once they reach age of 14, minors will continue serving their sentences in prisons. Law also includes a 3-year provision which allows courts to send minors to prison instead of youth detention for up to 10 days if they're considered dangerous. Currently, over 270 Palestinian minors are held in Israeli detention, many without charge or trial. Israeli forces press out with daily incursions and use of brutal force against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. This time they carried out a raid on the village of Aqaba near the city of Tubas. And our Ramallah correspondent Naka Ahmed is now joining us for your update and for the latest on that. Hello, Naka. Good morning to you. Hope you're safe and doing well.
Yes, well, since the hours of the morning, the IOF started raiding Aqaba village, or Aqaba town, actually, near Tubas. A large amount of vehicles, military vehicles, bulldozers, and soldiers were seen going into Aqaba from the nearby crossing point. And until this moment, these vehicles are still arriving. They have not stopped or even stopped going into Aqaba. Many new vehicles have been seen to come to also go out to Aqaba from the mentioned crossing point. As local sources have told us that the IOF is mainly attacking one house, surrounding one house, demanding many Palestinians inside that house to surrender themselves, actually. And while the IOF was raiding Aqaba, a 50-year-old man was injured. But the IOF banned the ambulances from going to the nearby areas. And until this moment, this man, we don't know what happened to this Palestinian man who was injured. And the ambulance, the Palestinian ambulance from the PRCS, have told the media that they are not able to go into Aqaba, as the IOF is banning any movement into the area where this man was injured. Well, Aqaba is not the only area that is being raided. Also from the hours of the night, Ya'bad and Jenin surrounding villages have been under a raid, and that has not finished until now. Since the hours of the night, the IOF went into Ya'bad, firing live ammunition around, and as they have said, chasing Palestinian resistance fighters in the area. And until this moment, so the raid on Aqaba and the raid on Jenin continues until this moment. In Tul Kerem refugee camp, which is very near to the events, the IOF has raided Tul Kerem in the hours of the night and went and withdrew from Tul Kerem. And at this moment, they are still on the surrounding areas of Tul Kerem area. Not only in the northern cities the action took place, but also over here in Ramallah. The IOF raided Sinwad village, which is to the west of Ramallah, and until this moment, they are imposing a siege on whomever comes out of the Sinwad or comes in into it by making many checkpoints and crossing points to limit the mobility of the Palestinian people in the area. Also, let's say about the attacks that are the Palestinians are subjected to in the area of Burin. Settlers have attacked. 30 minutes ago, we received this news that settlers had attacked Palestinians in the area of Burin, stealing whatever olive crops that they have picked through the early hours of the morning, assaulting them and beating them. Burin is a village actually between Ramallah and Nablus. It's to the north of Ramallah, and it has been subjected along with Madama, Merda, Kusra, and Yasuf. Many villages have been subjected to systematic attacks that are backed up and supported by the IOF forces. Actually, and another attacks happened actually into the south of the West Bank. We are talking about Al-Khalil and Beit Lahem, where events are escalating as we are seeing now. Events are escalating in Al-Khalil, almost daily raids and arrests are being done over there. One last thing to mention is that the Palestinian journalist syndicate have said that more two Palestinian journalists were martyred in Gaza Strip, raising the total Palestinian journalist number to a total of 185 Palestinian journalists that has been killed in the last 13 months.
Thank you, Naka. Have a good morning. Stay safe. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you for that update. Naka Hamed, they're joining us from occupied Ramallah. Israel, war in Lebanon shows no sign of abating as the regime's carried out fresh attacks on the southern outskirts of the capital, Beirut. Footage shows smoke billowing over Beirut. A wave of airstrikes hit the city's Dahiya district overnight after Israeli military warned residents there to leave the neighborhood. Lebanon's media report an air raid near Lebanese University and another one around the Burj Al Barzani suburb. More than 3,100 Lebanese have been killed in Israeli attacks in the country since October last year. That some clashes broke out between the regime and the resistance movement Hezbollah over Israel's genocide in Gaza. Meanwhile, Hezbollah has conducted fresh operations against Israeli targets and occupied territories while it continues to fight invading Israeli forces in southern Lebanon. Lebanese resistance movement said it launched a salvo advanced missiles at Israel's Tel Nof air base south of Tel Aviv. Loud explosions have also been reported in Tel Aviv after the attack by Hezbollah. The Lebanese fighters also targeted a training base for Israeli paratroopers in the Carmel settlement. Several other Israeli settlements have also come under attack in latest operations. Meanwhile, Israeli military has admitted at least one soldier was killed in clashes with Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. The United Nations interim force in Lebanon says the Israeli military has launched another spate of attacks against its personnel in southern Lebanon. UNIFIL's deputy spokesperson says the regime struck peacekeeping mission now 40 times since ongoing incursion against Lebanon began. Candice Ardil says latest attacks came shortly after Israel warned UNIFIL to evacuate 29 sites along the Lebanese border in occupied Golan Heights. Spokesman said the UN mission will stay put in the area despite deliberate attacks by the Israeli regime. EU Foreign Policy Chief Joseph Borrell has condemned the Friday incident without naming Israel. The regime also killed 3 Lebanese civilians and 6 UNIFIL peacekeepers in an attack on Thursday. Iraqi Islamic Resistance has released images of a recent drone attack on a target in occupied Palestinian territories. The umbrella group of Iraqi Resistance says it targeted a vital military site in northern occupied territories. The Islamic Resistance has repeatedly stated its operations are in support of Palestinian and Lebanese people. It's also stressed strikes are in response to massacres carried out by the Israeli regime against civilians, including women, children, and the elderly across occupied territories. The Iraqi Resistance has vowed to press ahead with its anti-regime operations with increased intensity. The Yemeni army's released footage of downing a U.S. Air Force MQ-9 aircraft over the country's Al-Jaf governorate. Footage shows moment drone was targeted and the aftermath of this operation. According to Yemeni army, this is the 12th such aircraft being downed since Sana'a started operations in retaliation of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Yemen says operations only stop once the regime ends its blockade and onslaught on Gaza and its aggression against Lebanon. Yemeni people have long been holding also weekly demonstrations in support of Palestinians and the resistance axis in the region for over a year now.
The Yemeni capital, Sana'a, was once again the center stage of pro-Palestine and Lebanon resistance rallies. Yemeni people say these demonstrations are part of a growing movement which is contributing to a global shift in support of Palestine.
Today's protest is a military front in the path of Allah, and whoever has joined this demonstration, it is as if they have taken part in a military action.
My message to Trump or any world tyrant is, you will not be able to stop our stance and support for our brothers in Palestine.
While protests remain a powerful front in the resistance against Israel and U.S. imperialism, Yemen's military efforts are also reaching new heights in capability.
The missile unit of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a specific military operation targeting the Nevatim airbase in Negev region, southern occupied Palestine, with hypersonic ballistic missile Palestine 2 that has reached its target. Thanks be to Allah. With the help of Allah Almighty, our air defenses succeeded in shooting down an American MQ-9 aircraft while it was carrying out hostile missions in the airspace of Al-Jaf Governorate at dawn on Friday.
The Friday protesters emphasize that their cause transcends U.S. politics and that they are undeterred by who occupies the White House. They believe real change in the West Asia region depends on the strength of the axis of resistance.
For 14 months, Friday demonstrations in solidarity with Palestine have continued, swelling in size and in strength. Ansar Allah's leader calls these rallies a powerful front line, equal to any battlefield in the fight against Israel. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
Israeli warplanes have carried out airstrikes on Syrian provinces of Aleppo and Idlib. Syria's official news agency, Sana'a, said the Israeli military launched attacks in the early hours of Saturday, targeting a number of sites in the Aleppo and Idlib countryside. Reports that air raids resulted in injuries of a number of soldiers and some material damage. Since the beginning of foreign-backed militancy in Syria back in 2011, Israel's carried out hundreds of strikes on the Arab country. The Israeli military has intensified its airstrikes on Syria since the regime launched its war on Lebanon. Thank you for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
Ever since you left, I must confess, the world has become a total mess. You were the bridge that connected hearts, always there for us when we were in distress. Everywhere I look, I see your trace. You tried to make the world a better place. Oppressors will never forget your frown. The oppressed will not forget the smile on your face. Oh, how you shine like a constellation in the sky. Oh, how you shine in the minds of nations that hold you high. Oh, tell me how.
under the tree of bliss. The trees you planted are missing you, but they've learned to blossom just like you. Though you were martyred mercilessly, an army of you is growing globally. 'Cause people are tired of all this prejudice. They wanna fight like you against injustice. Your name is Qasem Soleimani. You're a hero of humanity.
You defy the limits of intelligence, sending shivers down the spine of global arrogance. You decried oppression in every form, even though it put you in the eye of the storm. You extinguish the flames of terror far and wide. You help countries to reclaim their land that was occupied. That's why people will remember you as a hero, though the powers that be will picture you as a foe. You see, they instigate the terror and manipulate the news so they can whitewash every crime to make the world confused. They can say what they want, let them curse at the mirror. Truth will always prevail, let them live in error.
You found the key to heaven's gate. Martyred for justice, what a noble fate. Your legacy will linger on. Forever your name we celebrate. Oh, how you shine like a constellation in the sky. Oh, how you shine in the minds of nations that hold you high. Oh, tell me how it feels under the tree of bliss.
Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all. From the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee, and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions. as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O, the most merciful.
In the limelight.
Zionist regime forces and settlers are making this the most dangerous olive harvest season ever for Palestinian farmers in the occupied West Bank. This warning came from a dozen UN human rights experts, including Francesca Albanese, the UN Special Rapporteur on the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, during October, at least 270 settler-related attacks on Palestinians and their property were documented by UN Monitoring Group, OCHA, across 110 communities in the occupied West Bank, including East Al-Quds. Armed settlers and the Zionist regime troops attacks, harass, and prevent farmers from accessing their land and at times injure or kill them. The Zionists burned, cut, and vandalized more than 1,000 trees during October, mostly olives. They also stole crops and harvesting tools from Palestinians. Settlers even plowed Palestinian-owned land and planted trees on it in the Ain al-Baida village in the Jordan Valley. The Zionist regime blocks Palestinians from entering their land with physical barriers, limiting the times they're allowed to be on their land, and even placing arbitrary restrictions on the ages and number of farmers permitted to access the land. For example, the Israeli occupation authorities are limiting access to land near the Israeli settlement of Mevo Dotan to about 50 farmers aged 40 years or older, according to OCHA. This seriously hampers access to nearly 5,000 acres of land belonging to multiple families in the Jenin Governorate. Palestinian farmers are able to access their own lands in certain areas only with prior coordination permits granted by Israeli regime authorities. Attacks on farmers are expected to worsen as Israeli authorities have increasingly revoked or failed to issue them, the UN expert said. The Zionist regime authorities partially lifted restrictions on access to olive groves within 200 meters of Israeli settlement boundaries, but that is never a guarantee for the safety of Palestinians harvesting their olives. On October 17th, a 59-year-old Palestinian woman was fatally shot by Israeli fire while she was harvesting olives about 200 meters from the apartheid wall in the village of Fuqa near Jenin in northern occupied West Bank. But that area required no permits from the Israeli regime military. Tel Aviv Daily Haaretz reported a man dressed in military uniform arrived and fired approximately 10 shots in her direction. She was identified as Hanan Abdulrahman Abu Salame by the Palestinian Authority Health Ministry. Haaretz reported, a security source stated that according to an initial inquiry, Abu Salame was shot in an area where Palestinians are not required to coordinate olive harvesting with Israeli authorities, although they are advised to notify them before approaching the barrier. A member of the village council told the newspaper that the Palestinian Authority office had informed the council that olive harvesting was permitted with coordination with Israeli occupation authorities. Munir Barakat, the council member, said residents were then informed they could access their olive groves near the apartheid wall, as Abu Salame was doing. Settler attacks are a regular part of the olive harvest season year after year, and a serious threat to Palestinian lives and livelihoods. But since the Zionist regime's genocide of Palestinians in Gaza, extremists of the Jewish community have been emboldened to escalate their sometimes lethal attacks on Palestinians with complete impunity and habitual protection of the Zionist regime military. Since October 7, 2023, more than 14,000 trees, mostly olive, have been uprooted, destroyed or damaged. The publication Arab 48 reported, citing figures documented by Palestinians. The documented settler attacks on Palestinians related to the olive harvest so far this year are at least double the 60 settler attacks recorded during last year's harvest. The UN monitoring group OCHA said there were 59 incidents in 2022 and 36 in 2021. During last year's season, the Zionist occupation forces cancelled nearly all approvals for Palestinians to access their lands. Palestinians could not access their privately owned land located within the boundaries of Jewish-only settlements or along roads used by settlers. UNOCHA said they remain completely off-limits to Palestinian farmers this year as well. As a result, Palestinians were unable to harvest more than 23,700 acres of olive cultivated land and lost 1,200 metric tons of olive oil, worth an estimated $10 million. When the Zionist regime's genocide in Gaza started in October 2023, Palestinians in the occupied West Bank faced the highest levels of violence and movement restrictions by Israeli regime forces and Jewish settlers in many years. The autumn olive harvest is vital to Palestinian economy, and olives and olive oil are a deeply rooted part of Palestinian diet and culture. A decade ago, UN figures indicated that the olive oil industry accounted for 25% of the agricultural income in the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip. Typically beginning after the first rainfall at the beginning of fall, the harvest continues through October and into November. Palestinians of all ages gather to pick olives in their groves, sharing folk songs and sorting their crops. The Zionist regime's attack on centuries-old celebration of heritage is one more assault on Palestinian self-determination.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Nightmare of Jerusalem, Part 1.
April 10th, 2024, Tehran. Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, attended Eid al-Fitr prayer. The prayer is the most important religious aid of Muslims after a month of fasting. Ayatollah Khamenei talked about the certainty of punishing the Israeli regime. All military experts admitted that the Iranian leader's warning will be carried out. There were many speculations regarding how it would be fulfilled. Iran would soon show the world its might. It all happened at a time when the U.S. martyred the Iranian national hero and top anti-terrorist commander. Ayatollah Khamenei stated Israel's attack on Iran's embassy in Damascus was tantamount to an attack on Iranian territory. This declaration prompted some officials in the Israeli ruling party to deny any involvement in the attack. Analysts believe Iran would harm the interests of the Israeli regime through its allies and scattered battles. Others believe that Iran might attack one of Israel's diplomatic centers, potentially choosing a weaker country in the region like Jordan. Consequently, Israel began evacuating its diplomatic missions, which were considered possible targets. The U.S. had a different perspective. It believed Iran was deliberately positioning missiles in view of spy satellites to send a message to hostile countries that the attack will originate from the Islamic Republic's territory. If this speculation was accurate, how severe could Iran's attack be? Since the Second Arab-Israeli War, no country had targeted the Israeli regime. When Iraq, under Saddam, faced the first U.S. attack in 1990, it fired 11 missiles at Israel, all of which were thwarted. Most of Yemen's cruise missiles were also intercepted over the last 5 months.
We cannot say for certain what these missiles and drones were targeting, but they were launched from Yemen, heading north along the Red Sea, potentially towards targets in.
Now, Iran was considering attacking targets 2,000 kilometers beyond its borders. But was this feasible, and what would be the retaliation from Israel? Turkey, Iran's northwestern neighbor, not only produces and owns anti-ballistic and anti-cruise defense systems, but also has special NATO systems. Former U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Victoria Nuland stated that Turkey should have the highest defense capabilities. This means Iran had to deal with a defense system in the northwest. To the west, Iran is bordered by Iraq, which was occupied by the United States. On January 20, 2020, Iran destroyed large Ain al-Assad base with missiles in response to the assassination of Major General Qasem Soleimani, the commander of Iran's Quds Force.
Well, words can't even describe the amount of energy that is released by these missiles.
These rocket launches were conducted after Iraqi authorities were given a heads up 20 minutes before the firing, and likely the U.S. was also informed of the attack, but no defensive move was made against the missiles. 1 month later, on March 30, 2020, BBC Farsi reported the U.S. Army has deployed the Patriot anti-missile system in some bases in Iraq to protect its forces from possible attacks by Iran and its allies. Agence France-Presse also reported on March 30th, quoting anonymous sources, that one of the systems was sent to Ain al-Assad base in western Iraq last week and is currently being prepared. Thus, the Patriot systems based in Iraq will be the first defense barrier against Iran. Moreover, Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates have had open relationships with Israel for some time. Even when Yemen disrupted the transfer of goods from the Red Sea to Israel, the UAE and Saudi Arabia provided a free land route for goods to Jordan and from Jordan to Israeli-occupied territories. NATO's military capability should also be considered. Besides the U.S. and certain Arab states along the Persian Gulf, France and the U.K. would now also be part of the system defending Israel. Meanwhile, Israel uses a wide range of systems to counter attacks, from ballistic missiles with trajectories carrying them high into the atmosphere to cruise missiles and surface-to-surface rockets. Israel's Iron Dome system has often made headlines since the regime's military operation in Gaza in response to the Hamas-led operation of the 7th of October. But can this system, which has not been tested against any real or serious attack, be Israel's last layer of defense? At the highest level of defense, Israel uses the Arrow 1 and Arrow 2 anti-missile systems, cutting-edge technology from the U.S. The radar consists of four components: the Arrow interceptor missile, the Green Pine radar, Communication Control Command Center, and Launch Control Center. The system also uses the American Terminal High Altitude Area Defense, or THAAD, system and is movable. The radar can detect 30 targets at very high altitudes while traveling over 9 times the speed of sound. They claim that the newer version of the system can track ballistic missiles up to a range of 600 kilometers. The system calculates the ballistic trajectory of launched missiles and destroys them when they are on its path. The Arrow intercepts missiles in the uppermost layer of the atmosphere or beyond to prevent the spread of chemical or nuclear materials over occupied territories. On October 31, 2023, Israel claimed to have destroyed Yemen's long-range ballistic missile, and on November 9, Arrow 3, Israel's most advanced anti-missile system, reportedly intercepted a Yemeni medium-range missile near the port of Eilat. Each Arrow system contains 2 to 8 missiles and takes an hour to reload. At a lower layer is a David Sling missile system designed to counter missiles with a range of 70 to 300 kilometers, including Hezbollah's Katyushas, Qassam rockets, and Iran's tactical missiles. The system costs about $2 billion funded by American taxpayers to protect Israel. David Sling is designed to intercept and destroy targets at altitudes ranging from several meters to 15 kilometers above the ground, even if the targets travel at speeds up to 7 times the speed of sound. The radar range of David Sling exceeds 470 kilometers. The system contains 12 missiles and is capable of engaging ballistic missiles. Each Davis-Ling missile costs $1 million and functions by directly hitting the attacking missile. In the final stage, there's the Iron Dome. Each rocket costs $50 million and each missile costs $20,000. The Iron Dome is designed to shoot down targets such as mortars and rockets, which are often fired from Lebanon and Gaza. It is supposed to be most useful for protecting the cities near Gaza, as a large number of low-cost rockets are launched from the Gaza side. There are also THAAD and Patriot systems between Iran and occupied territories. THAAD combines features of all other systems and can engage targets at all altitudes. It is the exclusive interceptor for the United States and NATO. THAAD can intercept any target up to a range of 1,000 kilometers. The radar has two search modes, forward base and terminal base. In forward mode, the base is installed near the borders of the hostile country to estimate the direction of the missiles immediately after they are fired. A radar of this type has been installed in Turkey with another one in the occupied territories. In base mode, the radar is responsible for detecting and guiding anti-missile systems up to a range of 1,000 kilometers. When that is linked with a satellite, its range increases significantly. Furthermore, the Patriot system is located between Iran and Israel. The optimized Patriot has a missile with a smaller warhead that can reach higher altitudes, about 20 kilometers. The Patriot system forms a large dome next to THAAD, which has a range of 200 kilometers. Before the first Persian Gulf War, THAAD and the Patriot systems had not been tested on the ground. When Saddam Hussein started using al-Hussein and al-Abbas ballistic missiles, then U.S. President George Bush claimed they had intercepted 39 of the 40 missiles fired. However, on February 25, 1991, one of these missiles hit the Dahran base in Saudi Arabia, killing 28 U.S. soldiers. The U.S. president and military were concealing a secret. The Patriot system was supposed to distinguish whether a missile was fired at a sensitive target or towards the desert, and would not fire it if there was no danger. This system wasn't 100% effective, and as a result, only 25 of the 88 missiles fired by Iraq were intercepted. The Patriot system did not engage the rest. After the 1991 invasion, the United Nations banned Iraq from continuing its long-range missile program. However, in 2003, former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein secretly decided to build a missile with a range of 150 kilometers. That year, he acquired two tactical missiles. Previously, Iraq used Scud missiles, which were modified into al-Hussein and al-Abbas missiles by combining two Scuds. The al-Abbas missile was intended to have a range of 1,000 kilometers, but failed, and the project was abandoned after the first Persian Gulf War. In 2003, the new missiles did not work, and the U.S. destroyed all of them after occupying Iraq. Iraq then built the al-Samud missile, but it did not achieve satisfactory results. These were low-quality rockets intended to be combined with a few remaining rockets from the war. The Patriot system was the most successful among them, meaning Iran had to face the most complex defense systems in history. This also included air-launched missiles from fighter jets. What did Iran possess in order to overcome this size of defense system? It had completed the reverse engineering of the Scud missiles imported from Libya and developed the Shahab-1 missile with a range of about 300 kilometers. Military sources claimed Iran handed over its Shahab arsenal to Oman, Syria, and Hezbollah after achieving longer-range missiles. In the early 90s, Iran developed the Shahab-2 missile, similar to the Russian Scud-C. Soon after, Iran created the Shahab-3 missile. With a range of 2,100 kilometers, it can hit targets with over 1 ton of explosives. The Shahab-3 was considered Iran's most important deterrent against Israel's attacks in the 1990s. The most important tests of the Shahab were conducted in the desert of Qom, central Iran. In November 2001, Iran equipped its missiles with cluster warheads. On November 7th, 2003, the Washington Post reported that the Islamic Republic of Iran had developed a missile named Shahab-4, but had halted its production. The missile, capable of reaching Europe with a non-nuclear warhead, could pose a threat to Israel if equipped with a heavier weapon. The regime's prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, claimed that Iran has two other versions of the Shahab missile, namely the Shahab-5 and the Shahab-6, which have a range of more than 15,000 kilometers and are capable of striking any point on the planet. However, Iran has never commented on these claims. Iran has missiles called the Qadr-F and the Qadr-H. These missiles can be prepared for firing in less than 30 minutes and are considered tactical weapons with a range of 1,650 kilometers. Some categorize these missiles as hypersonic. Iran has also designed a missile named the Qiyam without wingtips, giving it extremely high radar evasion capability. Arming the Qiyam for firing takes only 20 minutes. Sejid is a different type of Iranian missile with a two-stage engine that runs on solid fuel. It is a mid-range missile with an operating range of 1,900 kilometers. Sejid can cover the distance from Natanz, which Israel aspires to hit, to Tel Aviv in less than 7 minutes. The Sejid 2 has a wingtip on the cap, significantly increasing its accuracy to below 50 meters. The Sejid 2 is guided through a combination of inertia, cap, and accurate gyroscopes with GPS positioning. Iran's missile experience, which began with Scud missiles, gradually led to the development of the Imad precision strike missiles. Imad has a range of 1,700 kilometers and features a warhead with wingtips, allowing Iranian users to guide it until the moment of impact. Unlike ballistic missiles, which hit targets like a stone after the warhead engine shuts off, Imad dives towards the target like a guided projectile. On February 13, 2024, Iran conducted a different experiment. The Aerospace Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps fired a series of Imad and Qadr-F missiles with guided warheads at a specific target. The Palm Achim Air Base, the main location where Israel's F-35 fighter jets are kept. The Israeli Prime Minister had threatened Iran militarily at this base with the American F-35 fighter behind him. The Palm Achim base is about 15 kilometers long. Iran simulated the plane hangar map for the test. Impact points were recorded by remote control cameras known as GoPro. Warheads of the missiles were non-explosive to accurately calculate the point of impact. After traveling about 1,500 kilometers, the Imad missiles hit the simulation targets and tents with high accuracy of 4 meters. This is a scene of the warhead hitting without a missile and the volume of dust rising due to the impact of the warhead. If the missiles were equipped with their famous high explosive warheads, a hell of fire would form at the impact site. In 2007, Iran tested a missile named Ashura. Iran's defense minister stated that the missile had an operational range of 2,000 kilometers. Uzi Rubin, the former head of Israel's missile department, reacted by saying, "If the information about this missile is correct, its construction is an important milestone in Iran's missile program." Ashura uses solid fuel, which greatly reduces the possibility of tracking the rocket launcher by satellites and aerial radars, and allows the missile to be transferred from one point to another. The military official from the Israeli regime also stated that the missile can hide and its preparation for launch does not require much time.
Obviously, then you can see here a picture which we found one very short clip of a solid propellant test in Iran. They are so proud and they're releasing. Sometimes I think the security forgets to screen things out. So this is a very short clip of about 2 seconds in one of the movies about the armament industry. 30 months later, 2.5, not bad at all for the time. The first Ashura took off. We don't have a picture of that because it's in the release. This is a construction by the American Missile Defense Agency. Slide of General Obering. I took this part. He gave me the slide. So 30 months from end of development of the solid propellant motor, still first flight. Not bad. But what's more impressive, that 12 months later, this was failed. 12 months later, they fired the second one. It failed also. They recovered, and in 6 months only, they fired a successful one. What does it mean? It means they know what they are doing. They have good program management, they have good system engineering, they have the engineering talent, and they have all the infrastructure they needed.
Iran produced the Kheibar and Khorramshahr series of missiles. The accuracy of these missiles is less than 10 meters, and at a range of 2,000 kilometers, their accuracy is below 30 meters. The guidance and control system operates in the middle phase of the flight, with guidance occurring outside the Earth's atmosphere. Upon leaving the atmosphere, missile's main engine shuts off when the fuel runs out and its warhead separates. 4 small control motors and 4 small guidance motors outside the atmosphere guide the warhead. This missile can change and correct its direction outside the atmosphere, making it very difficult to intercept by anti-ballistic missile defense systems. As it moves towards the target, the missile rotates and its warhead rains down on the target, breaking into 80 smaller rockets near the target. This missile poses a serious threat to Israel as it covers all parts of the occupied territories. Iran's missile power is based on the Scud missiles it acquired at the beginning of the Iran-Iraq War. Through reverse engineering, Iran developed its own technology. But are these few missiles all Iran can muster to fight the Israeli regime? We'll be right back.
morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم Brothers, sisters, dear listeners السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته and welcome to the program مفاتيح الحياة Keys of Life. We said one of the important keys of life is knowing how to deal with one another. And we spoke about number of people that we deal with and how we should deal with. We were discussing those who are sick and ill, that we need to become nice and kind and whatever to them. So we're discussing that notion, right? We said the first thing that we need to do when we have someone who is sick and ill is to go visit them. And being, you know, helpful, supportful, asking them for their needs and what have you. Also, when we look at the importance of this notion, because some people would say, well, why is it really important that I go visit a sick person? And when I say a sick person, obviously a person that you would know, either a family member or a friend or a colleague, someone that you